D-Mace, Finnegan, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, and David Janes here with you. A reminder, Predators GM Barry Trotz will join us in roughly 1 hour at 5 o'clock for his first weekly interview of the NHL season, which is about to get underway with the Blackhawks visiting the two-time defending Stanley Cup champion, Florida Panthers. And quickly, I have a question for both of you. Has there ever been an attractive championship ring? They are so ugly. They're always so ugly.
An attractive championship ring.
Yeah.
Hell yeah, all of them.
No, they are so
gaudy. Yes, they are. Because when
gaudy.
You have it, I don't care how it looks. As long as I got it on my finger.
I thought the Eagles one this year looked really cool.
The stupid
where the wings came out?
See, like, who needs that? Who needs that?
The championship ring?
But here's no, the wings coming off. Who needs a ring with wings on it?
Hey man, it's a once in a lifetime thing.
Who needs a big ring
yes,
on their fingers?
That's
you know
right.
What I mean?
Hey, I wish I would have got that sucker shoe.
Hey, I do too, but like
hey, that's true. But man. Speaking of someone who has a lot of championship rings, we usually save this. This is just a quick sidebar.
Uh-huh.
We usually save this segment for the end of the show, but because David Janes has brought this to my attention, we're going to do it now. It's the semi-frequent Adam takes a dump on Bill Belichick segment. And according to Inside Carolina, North Carolina's season-long documentary with Hulu is no longer happening.
Oh,
I wonder why.
You think?
You would have watched it.
I would.
Yeah,
you would have loved to watch it.
I would pay.
You'd have hate watched it.
$100 right now to see the footage that they've already got.
Oh, yeah.
That they're not going to air. I would pay $100 for it.
Yeah, you don't want to. Why do you want?
I want to see behind
you,
the scenes.
But I'm saying, why would Carolina want to put that stuff out? I mean, they're losing. It seems like a dumpster fire. I don't want to put that out on Hulu. Nope. Thank you, but no thank you.
I mean, I did take Clemson to cover against North Carolina during Take It to the Bank. Clemson was a 13.5 point favorite. They cleared that in the first quarter. It was 28-3 at the end of the first quarter. It was lovely. So I just wanted to take that moment because I haven't dumped on Bill Belichick in a couple of weeks. So thank you, David Janes.
You're welcome.
Trevor Maddich will join us in roughly 15 minutes. But before we get there, I don't know why I decided to do this, but I did. And I'm going to share what I found with you. So I wanted to see how Cam Ward, through his first five NFL starts, compares to Will Levis through Levis's first five starts under Brian Callahan. The reason why is because I thought it would sort of level the playing field. Same coaching staff, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I relied on Pro Football Focus, and the results were interesting to me. So, for example, completion percentage, which isn't it's an important statistic. Of course, you want to complete more passes than you don't. But I don't put a ton of stock in it versus other things. Completion percentage through Cam Ward's first five starts versus Levis's first five starts under Brian Callahan. Levis, 66.4%. Ward, 51.8%.
Mm-hmm.
Roughly the same yards per attempt. Roughly the same average depth of target. But the biggest difference between the two, and if you watched the Titans last year, this will not come as a surprise, is that Cam Ward is protecting the ball so much better than Will Levis. Will Levis, through five starts for Brian Callahan last season, had 10 turnovers, 7 interceptions, and 3 lost fumbles. Cam Ward has 5 turnovers, 3 interceptions, and 2 lost fumbles. So double the amount of turnovers for Will Levis versus Cam Ward through 5 starts. Also, keep in mind that Levis was injured in the start against the Miami Dolphins through 4 passes, so he barely played in that game. The other thing that stands out to me is that Cam Ward...
He still managed to turn over the ball in that game.
He did.
Yes, he did, for a touchdown.
I don't think it was for a touchdown, but he...
Which one was the touchdown? Remember,
was
it was
Green
a fumble.
Bay. Green
no,
Bay.
No, was it Green Bay or Miami? No, it was Miami.
He had a fumble in each... He lost a fumble in each of his first three starts last season. Again, Chicago, I guess it would have been the Jets, right?
Uh-huh.
The Jets.
And then the Packers. He lost a fumble in each of his
But also he had a pick six against the Packers.
He had an interception against the Dolphins.
Right.
Yeah, the defensive lineman. The defensive lineman. Okay, that's what I was talking about. I thought it was a fumble.
So So Cam Ward doing a much better job of protecting the ball than Will Levis. 5 turnovers for Ward, 10 for Will Levis through his first 5 starts under Brian Callahan. Here's the other thing that stands out to me. Ward is making more high-level throws. So PFF's big-time throw statistic. Through 5 starts, Cam Ward has 6. Will Levis had 2. Turnover-worthy plays. Will Levis had 7. Cam Ward has 3. Drops. Levis's receivers dropped 4 balls. Cam Ward's receivers have dropped 8 balls.
Really, more than that.
Well, at least according to Pro Football Focus. So what this tells me is that Ward has been considerably less – he has had considerably less help slash luck than Will Levis. He's protecting the ball better than Will Levis. He's making high-level throws more frequently than Will Levis, though his overall accuracy has not been good. So I sent you guys these numbers. What were your takeaways from my findings on Cam Ward – versus Will Levis through his first 5 starts under Brian Callahan?
If you're just looking at the first 5 starts, you would say, man, why isn't Will still the quarterback, you know, after those first 5 starts? But we understand what happened after that. And this is why, you know, some numbers at times don't tell the whole story. Are they true numbers? Yes, they are true. What you said is true. But it doesn't tell the whole story, the nuances within, you know, the game. For instance, Will Levis only had 4 drops. Cam Ward has 8, really more than that. I think it's in the double digits. I believe it's in the double digits. That hurts your percentage.
Your completion percentage.
Exactly. Yep. That hurts your completion percentage. And I think the completion goes with that. And then, unlike Will Levis, you're not taking the gimmies. Like, Will got to a point where he just started taking the check downs and the short routes and stuff like that. Cam bypasses that too many times. He bypasses it too many times to try to get the long one, or he'll hesitate, wait for the long one, and then have to try to come back down and dump it down to the lower guy. If he would just play the game and sometimes just take what the defense give you. You don't need the big play all the time. Cam's issues, I think, is he's always looking. It seems like, I'm not going to say he is, but it seems like he's looking for the wild play. He's looking for the big chunk play first. And then he comes back down to the shallow cross or the 8-9 yard, you know, dig routes and stuff like that. Whereas if they're giving it to you, take it. Because eventually they're going to get tired of that. And that's when you hit those hole shots. He loves to throw that seam route. That's when you hit those seam routes, play action, or when you're consistently taking those short gains and you're steady moving the sticks. 2 years ago, the Kansas City Chiefs had one of the worst, air yardage percentage, something like that, ball in the air. They had one of the worst, but they were moving the ball down the field effectively. Teams took away the deep route, and what did Patrick Mahomes do? He just started taking a little stuff, moving the ball methodically down the field. I think Cam's hit enough big things where teams are scouting like he's looking for the big play. He had bypassed a small play. He's looking for the big play. He has to start training himself now, whereas you're developing and learning as the game going. You say, okay, now I'm going to start taking this small stuff a little bit more often, because 3 yards, now it's 2nd and 7. Another 3 yards, now it's 3rd and 4. Now we're in 3rd and manageable now. But when you try to take that chunk shot because you want that big play and bypass the smaller ones, you find yourself in 2nd and long and ultimately 3rd and long. That's where I think that's the difference in regards to the percentage, completion percentage and the drops. But I think once Cam starts to learn this, because this offense is all about just timing and hitting those routes quickly. That's why I get so upset with those receivers when they drop those slant routes like last week. Io Manor, that was a catchable ball. You got to understand, that's how the passes are going to come. You're going to have to be able to catch. Those are NFL passes. You're going to be able to, you're going to have to catch those passes. And I know he will. But those things like that hurt the quarterback when you're just talking about the numbers.
But what my thought is thinking back on it, it does remind me with, you know, the 65%. Mm-hmm. Remember, Levis was in his second year. So he should be, he should have been further along, right? True. But there were times where I walked away from the game going, you know, Levis for a few drives can really look good. If you just took the clips of, say, the best three drives he had in each game, it might look better than the best three drives of Ward's game. And then that's where some of those stats look better. The Ward's stats are really ugly. Let's face the facts. And for a lot of the reasons you're saying, he's got to learn how to take some easy throws. They've got to find a way to get him some easier throws. But I don't know if it's featured as much as it should be when you put the stats side by side as just how catastrophic the turnovers were for Levis. If you could somehow wipe away, if you could flip those numbers, 5 turnovers as opposed to 10, Levis may well have survived a lot longer or made them think about this a little bit more. But those catastrophic turnovers that kept showing up beyond the first 5 starts were a disqualifier. Yeah. It was like, well, we can't do it. Because you admit that some of those stats look like if you took the names off of there,
yeah,
Levis has better looking stats. Yeah. But then you're like, but wait a minute, did you watch those games?
Exactly.
Remember
this? Yes.
Remember the Bears play? Remember the
yeah. One texter says, my takeaway from your findings is that being nerdy is a disease that is becoming an epidemic in my beautiful sport. Can we just go back to stuffing nerds into lockers? First of all, I was never stuffed into a locker. I never received a wedgie or a wet willy or a noogie or was hit by a spitball.
Well, you wasn't a kid then, because a few of those things happened to me. My own boys did it to me.
I got a lot of noogies.
Wedgies?
Has anyone actually ever been stuffed into a locker, not on a television show?
We tried to do it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we tried to do it to this dude named Pork and Bean.
You did it, didn't you? You were the stuffer.
I shut myself in a locker one time by myself.
Really? Why you do that?
Just because I thought it'd be fun to go in there.
Did you get out?
The swim coach had to come get me. I was a kid. My dad was an athletic director.
Oh,
and so
man.
A lot of summers, you know, gym rat Willie. This is where I got the adage. There's never not a way to get into a
gym.
Right? There's always a door open.
You get in the gym.
And so I was the ultimate gym rat. Hey, my dad's the boss, man. I can go anywhere.
Yeah.
So I went into the locker room one time. I was like, hey, lockers. That's fun.
It
makes a fun
called?
Sound when you close the locker. So I decided to go in the locker.
And you heard that click.
So I didn't need to be stuffed in the locker. I just went in there by myself. So I'm freaking out and banging on the thing. Fortunately, the swim coach was in earshot. He's like,
I'll
never forget the look on his face. He was like, what are you doing?
That's one thing I would have asked.
Like, he probably thought I got stuffed in the locker. He was like, did somebody stuff you in there? Like, is somebody playing a joke on you?
Oh, man.
I was like, no, I just did that.
Well, basically, this texter is saying, watch the game, nerd, which I do. But the stats help me understand the game better. All just get along?
He's not used to your big-ass glasses.
That's right.
All. He's just not used to it. The more and more he'll listen, the more and more he'll get used to it. Everybody loves the bag. Everybody.
Women love an intellectual.
There you go.
That's all I'm saying. Yeah. That's all I'm saying. 615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Trevor Maddich will join us coming up next. We'll get his thoughts on the Titans' win on Sunday. We'll talk some college football as well. Curious for Trevor's thoughts on what he saw in the Vanderbilt-Alabama game on Saturday. We'll do that all with Trevor coming up next. 615-737-1025. Our show is proudly presented by Bax Homeworks, which transforms kitchens, bathrooms, and living spaces into places you can't wait to come home to. Get a free estimate right now at baxhomeworks.com. D-May's Fingin and Donick 102.5 The Game. The sun is indeed coming out after a rainy day. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Fingin, pleased to be joined on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, by Trevor Maddich, who is brought to you by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. Trevor, the Titans pull off an improbable win on Sunday against the Arizona Cardinals, who did a great deal to help out the Titans in securing their first win of the season. But let's go to the fourth quarter. Cam Ward was outstanding in the fourth quarter. especially in the two-minute drive to set up the game-winning field goal. What was working for Cam Ward and the Titans offense in the fourth quarter that had not been working in every other quarter this season?
Well, first, I think we need to give credit where credit's due. And that is Miss Frieda won this game for Tennessee. She's a friend of our family. She prays for Tennessee Titans every week. And if there's anyone in Nashville whose prayers should be heard and answered, it's Miss Frieda. And when you look at the way that fourth quarter went with, you know, the crazy stuff that happened fourth quarter and otherwise, with the 72-yard run that should have been a touchdown for the Cardinals, and the running back inexplicably dropped the ball inches before he got to the goal line, that's 7 points that the Cardinals didn't get. And then when you talk about that crazy interception, tip ball interception of Cam Ward, fumble by the interceptor, recovery by Tyler Lockett in the end zone for a touchdown. That's crazy stuff. It's Miss Frieda making sure that divine powers were helping Tennessee in this game. Now, as you look at the tape of it, I think what Cam Ward did was get the ball to his playmakers and let them be the hero instead of him trying to be the hero. I think part of the reason he's got about a 52% completion percentage is that he keeps on trying to make plays. And I get it. When you're trailing, you got to make plays down the field, et cetera. But what I think he learned today is that even on shorter passes, if he just gets the ball to his playmaker in a place that the defense gives you, let his playmaker be the hero, because there's always a soft spot in every single coverage, every time. You just have to find it, and you got to hit the guy that's in that in time, on time, and to the right spot, et cetera. And I think in the second half, especially the fourth quarter of this game, Cam Ward did a much better job of just taking a deep breath and saying, okay, I'm going to find the soft spot in the defense. I'm going to hit my guy there, and I'm going to let my guy be the guy. And for the first three quarters, Cam Ward completed 38% of his passes for 72 yards. In the fourth quarter, he completed 72% for 193 yards. And the big difference was, I think Cam just took the weight off of himself and put it on other people.
Now, Trevor, do you think this was just a flash in the pan, or do you think this is something that can spark something, spark the Titans? And listen, I'm not trying to insinuate that this is a playoff team, but what I mean spark is, it doesn't look like it has looked the last three or four games.
No, I think it can be something that they can continue with, because it's a better use of the resources they have available. You know, I mean, you look at the tight ends, for example, Chiakonkwo and Gunnar Helm. They both were targeted 5 times. They both had 4 catches. And I think that Cam is seeing that, hey, these guys are my friend. Especially Gunnar Helm had a couple of nice vertical catches. These guys are safety blankets that you can get the ball to in a soft spot of the defense, and it makes everybody look good. You know, Calvin Ridley had 10 targets, only 5 catches, but those 5 catches were huge. And they weren't just a bubble screen that he had a long run afterwards. They were vertical throws down the field, some of them outstanding vertical throws. And those kinds of things develop chemistry with the receiver like Ridley, who needs to make plays on vertical throws to open up everything else. And I think that chemistry is growing between Ward and Ridley. I think the realization that the tight ends are his friends help Cam Ward, I think, evolve and grow as a quarterback. And I think Cam Ward, hopefully, he's listening to you, Derek, talk about how when you complete a higher percentage of your passes, even though they're not very far down the field, you put yourself in manageable situations with the chains, you get a first down because you've got third and manageable, and then you get another first down, and that's when the big plays can start to come to you. Instead of you trying to force the big plays, end up punting after three and out, and then the play caller can't get into any kind of rhythm. So to your question, Derek, the things that they did on offense in the fourth quarter of this game are repeatable because they haven't done enough of the things that succeeded in the fourth quarter against the Cardinals in previous games.
We'll talk with Trevor Maddich, ESPN NFL analyst, as well as college football. Now, speaking of the offense and how it looked in the fourth quarter, I think the overall game, and Willie and Adam and I were talking about this yesterday, they were more multiple in their sets, which I think allowed the tight ends to be more involved in what they're doing. Is that something, or is that something they should continue to do? Because it seemed like they ran more, and maybe it wasn't, but it just seemed like they ran more tight end emphasize offense rather than not running it.
Yeah, no, they seem to. I can see a lot of room for more creativity in terms of the play design. They can't make big changes in the scheme and the way they do things, but within any scheme, within any playbook, you've got simple and you've got complex, and then you've got everything in between. And one thing that you noticed about this team early on in the season anyway, in the first five games, in the first couple of them, it didn't seem like they did a whole lot of motion. Didn't seem like they did a whole lot of bunch formation, which is where you take three or four receivers and you put them in a little bunch all together, because that makes it so that they can't be pressed off the line. The defense has to back off and give them more space to have a free release. And so things like this, plays that are designed as rub routes, where you have two crossing routes that'll pass each other right shoulder to shoulder. And then sometimes you start that kind of a route, have the receivers stop, and then double back out on the other side, a double arrow. And these kinds of creative things, a bubble screen that's a fake bubble screen, and one of the receivers who starts the block takes off down the field. There are some things I think they can do from a play calling standpoint that are in the offense now, or that would be easy to add, that would help him and would help those receivers get open. And I'd like to see more of that.
We're talking to Trevor Maddich from ESPN, breaking down a little football. Trevor, I've got a question about Vanderbilt, Alabama in a moment. But before we get off of the Titans, you had some pretty high expectations for Peter Skoronski before the season. He seems to be progressing well. What are you seeing there?
Yeah, Willie, well, I see him playing at times on the level of a Pro Bowl guard. And there are some times when he'll get pushed back a little bit. But at the same time, overall, game to game, if not play to play, I think that he is going to be in the conversation as a Pro Bowler if he continues to progress the way he's progressed. Remember that his first year, he had a appendectomy, I think it was, just before the season, and he never had his size and strength back to where he wanted it. Last year, he had a really bad situation, and 2 years ago, really bad situations at left tackle and at center. And he was trying to help guys more than he probably should have, and it made him look worse than he probably could have, blocking his own guy. Well, now he's got veterans on either side of him, and now he's got his body where he needs it to be, and you see what he can be. Now, he still has a lot of football left to play in order to show that it wasn't just a flash in the pan, but I think so far, Skoronic has been what they expected him to be finally when they took him so high in the draft.
What was your main takeaway with Vanderbilt and Alabama? Let's take them each individually. As you saw Vanderbilt stack up on the road at Alabama, they obviously came up short, and Diego Pavia had the turnovers. But as you see it playing forward, what can Vanderbilt take out of this game? How do you see them matching up with a lot of other very tough opponents from here out?
I think Vanderbilt should be proud of how they matched up with Alabama. They basically took Alabama's best punch, and they punched Alabama right back. Now, Bama's ahead of Vanderbilt when it comes to recruiting and depth and things like that, and it showed up in this game. But from a standpoint of how they matched up, they weren't the Vanderbilt of old, where you watched them play and you thought, okay, these athletes aren't like those athletes, and they really don't have a chance unless they get lucky. It wasn't that way. Now, the score, I think, is 30-14 was worse than the game really looked because of those turnovers that you mentioned, Willie. One of them was a fumble where they had a long drive, Vanderbilt did, got the ball down to about the 13-yard line, and then Pavia broke out of the pocket and he ran up the field, and there was just a phenomenal strip, just an outstanding defensive play to strip that ball out milliseconds before Pavia's knee hit the ground. But that took points away from Vandy, either a touchdown or a field goal. Then there was an interception where they had a long drive, got it down to the 22-yard line, and the safety, Sab, did a fantastic job of reading the quarterback and coming out of nowhere, basically, and stepping in front of the receiver. And so, you know, give Alabama a lot of credit for creating those takeaways. But Vandy was moving the ball. Vandy had gotten into scoring position. And the score would be a lot different had they gotten points in those situations. One thing I think that they need to continue to improve on, Vandy, is their running. You know, their stats look pretty good. For goodness sake, they averaged 7.6 yards per carry, 136 yards. They ran the ball well. Well, two plays had 101 yards, including a Cedric Alexander 65-yard touchdown, which was pretty cool to watch. But 101 yards on two running plays, that means that they had 16 carries for 35 yards all the rest of their running plays. That's about 2 yards per carry. That wasn't good enough. But that's part of the reason that in this game, Vandy didn't do what they did last year to beat Alabama, which is dominate third down. Last year, they were 67% on third down conversions, Vandy was, and this year they were 45%. Part of the reason was they didn't run the ball quite as well. So you can see where Vandy can improve, but you can also see where Vandy is no longer overmatched by one of the best teams in the country.
Now let's take it from Alabama's perspective, because, of course, Tennessee is playing both of these teams. We know the bar is set as high as it can be for the Alabama program. Is Alabama a national title contender in your mind?
Yes. Yes. I think the defense is coming together. But I think what makes them a national title contender is their quarterback, Ty Simpson. And for the Tennessee Volunteers, this is something that they need to pay attention to, especially after Gunnar Stockton of Georgia, who wasn't supposed to be a great passer, lit him up through the air. And that was a real disappointing loss for Tennessee. They had that game won, for goodness sake, against Georgia. But Ty Simpson is better suited to run head coach Kalen DeBoer's offense than Jalen Milroe was last year. Milroe excelled at throwing the deep pass. But you don't need to even know what the coverage is to do that. You just throw the ball up and over the top of everybody. Well, the mid-level passes around 20 or so yards downfield require a lot more from the quarterback. You need to know what the coverage is. Then, based on that coverage, you need to throw the ball to a spot on time with the correct velocity and trajectory based on what the coverage is. And Milroe never was able to master that in college. Ty Simpson seems to be not just, if not mastering it, excels at it right now. And when you can hit those intermediate passes, it opens up all the rest of the offense. And so, because Ty Simpson's able to do that, I think that you've got to consider Alabama, even after that you know, extended nap they had in the opener against Florida State, you've got to consider them a national championship contender. The truth of it is, who is the dominant team that no one can beat? You can make a case for Oregon or Ohio State, but I think you've got Bama moving into a category where they should be considered that way if they continue to grow.
Trevor Maddich has been our guest on D-Maze, Vingan and Donick. He joins us every Tuesday afternoon, and he is brought to you by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. Trevor, great stuff as always, my friend. We'll catch up next week.
Thanks, Adam. Thanks, guys.
615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines are driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com. A reminder, Barry Trotz, Predators GM, will join us at the top of the hour at 5 o'clock. Coming up next, we have spent a lot of time discussing Brian Callahan's job security, but there is another coach in Nashville whose seat is also sizzling. We discuss that next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 102.5 The Game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. A reminder, Barry Trotz, Predators GM, will join us at 5 o'clock. We will talk to Barry Trotz every week, usually on Tuesdays at 5 o'clock. You know, the Predator schedule, sometimes it will change, but it will usually be Tuesdays at 5 o'clock. So we look forward to catching up with Barry Trotz for the first time in about 15 minutes. But as I said before the break, we've spent so much time talking about Brian Callahan and if and when he's going to be fired and all of that stuff. There is another coach in this city who a lot of people believe is on the hot seat, and that would be Andrew Brunette. And today, with the NHL season starting, by the way, 1-1 Blackhawks-Panthers in Sunrise, Florida. With the NHL season starting today, The Athletic put out its season predictions. I used to take part in all of these. And there are multiple questions, like who's going to win the Stanley Cup? Who is the dark horse Stanley Cup contender? And which team is going to exceed expectations the most? Things like that. But also included in this survey is who will be the first coach fired? And by an overwhelming majority, 48.6% of respondents said Andrew Brunet.
Now, again, clarify this. Was this a fan poll, a media poll, a player poll?
This is a poll done by the staff writers at The Athletic who report on the NHL. So my guess is that our very own Joe Rexroad, who does participate in these things, also contributed to this. That is an assumption. But it is the staff of The Athletic who covers the NHL. So 48.6% of the staff that participated in this poll, Andrew Brunet, is going to be the first coach fired. By the way, the next closest, Lindy Ruff with the Buffalo Sabres at 14.3%. So everybody assumes, because a lot of the projections are coming out, and the Predators are expected to be among the worst teams in the NHL again. As Barry Trotz said at the start of training camp, let's see if the Predators can prove the prognosticators wrong for the third year in a row, or whatever he said. So here's my question to you, Willie. How hot do you realistically think Andrew Brunet's seat is as the season opens on Thursday? We've talked about this quite a bit. We talked about it quite a bit last season. It is of a major benefit to Andrew Brunet that his boss was also a coach. And Barry Trotz showed extreme patience with Andrew Brunet last season. If Barry Trotz, I'm somewhat convinced of this. If Barry Trotz wasn't Andrew Brunet's boss, Andrew Brunet would have been fired last season. But Trotz believes in Andrew Brunet, talked about how he's a great young coach, gave him things that he wanted him to work on this offseason, and we'll talk with Barry Trotz about that shortly, I'm sure. But how hot, Willie, do you realistically believe Brunet's seat is as the season opens on Thursday?
Well, I think back on whatever date that was, it would have been mid-April when the season ended, and Barry Trotz had that very long post-season press conference
yes,
where he went into great detail on the number one thing that everybody wants to know is Andrew Brunet coming back? That day when he said Andrew Brunet is coming back, I think I said the next day, we now know 100% that on every poll just like this, he will be the number one guy on the list. And so nobody should be surprised by that poll. If you looked at that poll, I'm like, oh my gosh. Like, you clearly weren't. You should have known that April 15th. And that being said, Andrew Brunet knows. He knew that when he was getting the nod to come back, he knows his name's going to be at the top of every list that is similar to that, whether you're polling fans, polling media, etc. So this is something that we will ask Barry Trotz when we have him on at 5 o'clock. Because the key here is, does Andrew Brunet have a defeatist, as soon as we lose a couple games, I'm out of here anyway? Or did what I think happen? Did he embrace the challenge and look themselves in the mirror and say, how do we fix this? How does this look better? And it starts to me on the defensive end. I think we're going to get our answer in the first 10 or 15 games. As we said, they have to be better defensively to give themselves a chance. So to answer your question, the seat is the hottest in the NHL. There's no way around it. But how does he handle that? That's going to be the key. That doesn't mean he will be the first coach fired. It's up to them to have a good-looking group. Barry Trotz will be patient. If he thinks they're getting close to the most out of what they can get with this group, he's going to stay with them. I don't think he's going to have an itchy trigger finger. But that being said, the start has been so important the last 2 years, they must get off to a better start this year. That's the first hurdle to climb.
By the way, Derek, before you respond, Brett in Lebanon says 48% is not a majority. It's a plurality, but not a majority. I'm kind of ashamed of myself for saying that.
I think that deserves a button.
Where's the bell?
Where's the bell?
There we go. There you go, Brett. You get a bell. I'm not the only nerd
on
this
show
or who listens to this show. You are correct, Brett. I'm ashamed of myself. Derek, please go ahead.
No, I was going to ask, Willie, do you think, because there was a lot made of the exit interviews and, you know, coach talking to certain players more than just once. And everybody waiting on what is Barry going to do? What is Barry going to do? But it was like, I'm taking my time. I got to talk to all the players. Do you think that will affect how he go about the beginning of the season as far as how he looks at Coach Bruno in a sense of, you know, giving him a little bit more leeway than that? Because what the players said had to have held some weight because he kept them, you know? So it doesn't seem like it would just be a quick hook.
I think that from afar, one of the other reasons besides the obvious that they were supposed to be good and they weren't just not good, they were towards the bottom not good. Based on it was the worst season in Predators history based on the expectation level. So that's what the writers from afar see. That was easy. The other part that was easy to see was you had some players like Jonathan Marchessault speak out. And so to question, what are we doing? We need to play a little differently. And then the other part of this that makes it very easy to vote for Andrew, quote-unquote, vote for Andrew Brunette, is that they brought in a former NHL coach in Luke Richardson and put him right on the bench. So from afar, that looks like, oh, man, they are preparing. They've got it all lined up. If they want to make a move, it'll be easy. But I think we're gonna hear Barry Trotz talk about how this process has gone, and what you hope. And we just discussed the same theme, D-Mace, in the first hour in regards to Callahan getting the leadership together, and air the grievances. Did that happen over the summer with Brunette? I think it did to a degree, and I think that you're gonna see them play a little bit differently than they have before. That was the knock on Brunette. Two knocks, right? He was more of the player's coach. Mm-hmm. He did not hold the veterans accountable early in the year when they were struggling. He didn't bench anybody. He didn't go off on the media or anything.
That was not his style.
That was
a big issue for me,
right.
Holding the veteran players accountable.
And if you know Andrew Brunette, you know that that's not his style. But number two, the biggest thing I think from that looked like it was the story that emerged more than that was they didn't adjust to the talent that they had. He wanted to play a certain way. He didn't have the personnel to play that way, and it never worked. And he waited too long to start adjusting. Now they have a chance to reset and play a slightly different way from training camp through, and we'll see how it looks when it gets on the ice.
The Predators face a uphill climb to make the playoffs this season. They missed the playoffs last season by 28 points. And I did this research today with help of the NHL's stats and information department. Over the past 20 years, since 2005-2006, which is the beginning of the salary cap era, there have been four teams over the past 20 years that made the playoffs after missing them by at least 25 points the previous season. So this is a question I will ask Barry Trotz.
Now, is that when you and I discussed this? Because we brought this up on the drive home from Kentucky yesterday. When we kind of came up with this, how many times? Because I think you were the one that said, how many times has it happened where you made up that much ground in one season?
Yes.
Did you think the number would be that high? It's actually happened more times than I thought.
No, I did not think it would be that high.
And it's actually four times in the last 5 or 6 years, right?
Four times since 2017-18. Yes.
Yeah. So four times in the last
close to 10 years.
So it's done. It's you can make up that ground in a season, if it's happened. So it's not like it's going to be a fluke, but at the same time, nobody's really predicting it, and rightfully so.
And you know, it I'm wondering, and we will ask Barry Trotz this in just a matter of minutes, I'm wondering, is it realistic to expect this team to make the kind of significant bounce back that will be required to get back into the playoff picture? I expect this team to bounce back because, quite frankly, it can't get worse than what it was last season. I'm expecting some, here's a nerdy term for you, positive regression. I'm expecting the shooters that couldn't hit the net last year to hit the net more in line with their career totals. Steven Stamkos, for example. But I, like 28 points, that is a huge hill to climb. And I am incredibly skeptical that they can do it. A lot of people, I think, are with me in that.
Do you think they can't do it because of the... Because obviously the talent's there. So do you think... What is the reason you think... Because when they went out and got these players last year, we thought they could do it, but obviously it didn't work for whatever reason.
I mean, part of it is...
So why isn't it... Because they got the same players, added with some more.
It's a good question, and I think it will require more time than we have right now to answer. So I do want to take time to do that at some point before the season opener on Thursday. But here's one thing that stands out to me. This team's top 6 point scorers last season were all in their 30s. That is tied with the Pittsburgh Penguins for the most in the NHL. Brady Martin's on the roster. That's great. They need some young blood on that team. But I'm not expecting Brady Martin to become a superstar overnight. When they made those moves a couple of years ago, or last year, I said to myself, that's great. They better win because this team is old. And if they miss their window, they're going to continue to get older. And they're leaving their prime years. So that's why I'm skeptical, because this team relied on too many older players to lead the way. And I do think that's a really good question, Derek. I think we should explore that more before Thursday. But let's get to Barry Trotz, Predators general manager. He will join us coming up next to discuss all of the things we've been discussing right now and more. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vinge, 1025 The Game.